Welcome to the next edition of Grid Forward Chats. I'm Bryce Yonker. We're really excited to dive into Season 5. This season is sponsored by Virtual Peaker, who helps utilities maximize the value of distributed energy resources. Today for the season kickoff, we have a great friend, Whitney Muse. Whitney came over to DOE a couple years back and last year moved over to the White House. Whitney, thanks for being on with us.
Happy to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, some on your background and especially what you are working on these days?
Sure. So I'm a senior policy advisor at the White House in its Office of Clean Energy Innovation and Implementation, which is the White House office focused on all things Inflation Reduction Act implementation. As you mentioned, I was at DOE previously where I helped stand up the Grid Deployment Office. I also worked as Chief of Staff in the Office of Electricity and have been working on power sector topics both internationally and domestically for about the past decade.
Excellent. Well, we're very excited to have you on. And I think where we kind of like to start is, what's the current focus at the administration on advancing the grid in energy transition areas?
So with the investments that the Biden administration has made through the bipartisan infrastructure law, through the Inflation Reduction Act, even the American Rescue Plan and the CHIPS and Science Act, we're really looking at broad investments in all sectors of the American economy. And much of that is pushing towards clean energy deployment, looking to get to a clean power sector by 2035 and a clean economy by 2050. The grid is the backbone of that. That transition, as you and your listeners well know, only happens if we have a resilient and reliable grid. And so we need significant investments in the grid to get to that point and to support that transition.
So maybe you can cover a few highlights around the focus regionally. So obviously the initiatives and efforts there cover across the country. A lot of our listeners are in the West, but across the country. But how do some of these resources make their way and impact the key issues that are happening across the country?
So across the country, we're seeing investments through DOE's programs. I know I'll talk a bit about federal investments as we get throughout the show. But things in the West, you know, as you all are facing dynamics of, as you all are confronting market dynamics and thinking about how you want to transition or not into a Western market formation, there's certainly support coming out of DOE to help facilitate conversations through the region. But from the infrastructure investments, you know, everything from hydrogen hubs out in California and the Pacific Northwest, many parts of the country have states that received awards through the Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnership Program that I know we'll talk about a bunch. But broadly, we're seeing that as we have opportunities to improve resilience of the grid, and as the West is particularly facing wildfires, there's also concerns around drought. I work with colleagues that have played a hand in the discussions around the Snake River dams and the broader Columbia River ecosystem in the West, and thinking about how to help bring clean energy to the region to help facilitate dialogue and conversations around the future of the Columbia River system. And so there's a number of opportunities and investments coming into the West from this administration. I'd say across the country, we're making grid and transmission investments that touch all manner of country, all manners across the country, from state investments and also those going to the local level. Can't leave out the territories for those of you that are in the far west of the country, in the middle of the Pacific as well.
Well, it seems like a pretty unprecedented time, so thanks for the overview. Our audience knows the drivers and issues, but I think it's maybe good to just lay those out before we dive into the details. From your perspective, what's in the way for near-term progress on accelerating grid capabilities? And I guess the drivers are the reasons for the administration to be making these investments.
So certainly these are investments are the largest we've seen since, you know, New Deal era, or, you know, immediately post-World War II, Eisenhower era, kind of federal highway expansion. We haven't seen concentrated investment in all aspects of the economy since then. And so part of it is just the need for federal investment and the opportunity that, not having done so for decades, really we are afforded in this moment. For near-term challenges, you know, we got significant funding, which is exciting. But in order to deploy that successfully on the grid and to get these projects built, whether it is new transmission lines, upgraded substations, if we're looking at adding grid-enhancing technologies to lines or building microgrids. Some near-term constraints are supply chain. You know, we certainly saw overall in the economy that when the COVID crisis, the pandemic hit originally in 2020, it really spiked delays across a wide swath of the economy. Many parts of the economy have settled back. That's not true for a lot of the grid components and transformers, and even some of the generation technologies on the solar side, where we really do still have significant supply chain concerns and constraints. The other factor I would highlight is the people. It's really exciting to have all this funding flowing into the economy, but then we need a workforce to support that. And so everyone is looking to hire the same handful of, you know, people that really know how to design and build, you know, transmission projects, or linemen. I'm sure line workers, I should say, are likely at a premium with all of this investment going in, but also on the permitting side, right? Everyone needs an archaeologist or a biologist or an ornithologist if you're dealing with whatever species is in the midst of the project that you need to consider on the permitting side. So supply chain and workforce are the two near-term challenges that I think we are working through alongside deploying the dollars.
Great. Let's jump into what I call the federal toolkit. And I don't want to leave any of the big rocks unturned here. So let's start on grants. A lot of our community, as you had mentioned, is trying to leverage the unique opportunity for the grants that are available. And these are often trying to catalyze commercial larger scale deployments. What aspects are in motion on the grant space right now? Where are these at? Where do these go in the next few months and few years?
So I'll start with my former office at DOE, the Grid Deployment Office. And so the Infrastructure Bill and the Inflation Reduction Act gave that office over $26 billion of funding. The crown jewel of that, I'd say, is the $10.5 billion Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnership Program, better known as GRIP. And so there were first round GRIP awards last October, putting out $3.5 billion to 58 projects over 44 states. DOE quickly followed that with opening round two. No rest for the weary when it comes to GRIP. And so $3.9 billion in funding for round two opened in November of 2023, with concept papers due earlier this year. And I believe at the point that this is recording, concept paper notifications went out at the end of February. And so all of those that submitted a concept paper are now reviewing and revising their materials to submit full applications in April and May. Moving on from GRIP, on the state and tribal side, the Grid Deployment Office pairs the competitive funding for GRIP. And I should say that GRIP is funding that goes for grid resilience that can offer investments in new transmission, increasing capacity on existing transmission lines with grid enhancing technology deployment. It offers funding through the smart grid grants to look at deployment of monitoring and control technologies, thinking about improved communication on the grid, and then investments in grid resilience and grid hardening. That grid resilience, that grid hardening piece also has a state and tribal formula grant component. And so in January, the third round of funding, or the fiscal year 24 funding opened in January, $562 million for all states, territories, and federally recognized tribes, as well as the Alaska Native corporations and villages. And that's funding for those states, territories, and tribes to make investments in grid resilience and grid hardening within their jurisdictions where they see the greatest need that can provide significant community benefit. We hope that there are synergies and ties between the competitive funding coming through GRIP and what the states, territories, and tribes do through this formula funding. Continuing the landscape of grant funding, I'd say the big other pot of grant funding that has some pieces that will go into advanced grid capabilities are over at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have a $9.7 billion new ERA program, which is principally helping the rural electric co-ops to transition to cleaner generation, but that would include upgrades to their transmission system. And so there's significant opportunity for transmission upgrades for the rural co-ops through USDA's New Era program that did a first round of solicitations, or I should say its only round of solicitations last fall. And there should be notices out in terms of letters of intent to proceed within the coming weeks.
And there are other areas, but I agree, you highlighted the big ones. We have seen quite a buzz of activity because, yes, concept paper notices came back. So everybody's getting ready for GRIP round two. And we're really excited to hear about the $10 billion at USDA. We heard it was an overwhelming amount of submissions. So that's great. Maybe pivoting over to a little bit more IRA focused, let's talk a little bit about the tax incentives. And that was certainly a critical element, the 10-year tax incentive extension for various clean energy development. Treasury's issued the guidance, and the elective direct pay aspects are trickling their way out into the community. Maybe you can talk about how this is going, where this is going, and the sort of impact that you all are anticipating it has.
You hit the big point in your framing, which is the 10 years of certainty for the investment and production tax credits is a huge opportunity through the Inflation Reduction Act. Previously, we'd get a year or two stop and starts. Will Congress extend it or not? And with the IRA, it reduces that and provides significant certainty, which is very helpful for investments. And on the grid front, you know, there are a few very limited tax credits that are directly for the transmission or distribution grid upgrades. What it is offered in IRA is significant investments in clean generation. And so opportunities to get upwards of a 30% tax credit for clean generation, whether that's solar, wind, geothermal, anything. And so really investments in geothermal that as utilities and as the munis and co-ops are balancing how they are looking to invest in their system and make this, as they go through this clean transition, the tax credits are helping to bring down the cost of the generation, recognizing there will still be transmission and distribution grid upgrades needed. You also mentioned direct pay, which is a wonderful feature of the IRA as well, giving access to these tax credits to those that don't traditionally have tax credit liability. So those that are nonprofits and cities, states, and so opening it up for governments as well.
All right, we'll pivot again. I called this one manufacturing incentives. So another core aspect really of both packages and CHIPS and others has been to support onshoring capacity of manufacturing of U.S.-made goods. So can you talk a little bit about how these programs are going, in particular where they may be eligible or focused on grid components?
Absolutely. And I would say this is another key part of the President Biden's Investing in America agenda is to onshore and reshore domestic manufacturing. And that goes across the manufacturing and supply chain sectors. But in the grid space, there's a number of programs and areas to support increasing manufacturing to address some of those grid component supply chain aspects that I mentioned earlier, as well as to just broadly support the expansion and really bringing home of what some of America's research and development work did and to ensure that we are also benefiting from its manufacturing opportunities. So those programs include there's 48C, which offers $10 billion in investments in clean energy manufacturing that does explicitly call out grid components. The first round of selections will be announced in late March or April, and we expect to see a second round of funding coming out in the spring. And so for those that are on the manufacturing side, 48C is a great program to keep an eye on that's administered through the Treasury and in conjunction and collaboration with the Department of Energy. On the manufacturing side, some of the announcements that are worth flagging, which is that earlier in February, Siemens Energy announced an expansion of its existing facilities in North Carolina to build large power transformers. This will be the first power transformer manufacturing facility in the U.S. for Siemens Energy, and it also ultimately, when it's at its full capacity, expand the U.S. manufacturing of large power transformers by 40%, which is significant given that you know how constrained the LPT space is. And that's just one example of the types of investments that we're seeing in manufacturing that are as a result of the IRA and just the broader economic environment for clean energy manufacturing.
Let's maybe touch on financing briefly. So we know that there's quite a few resources at LPO to provide loans. Maybe you can cover to the extent that those look like they're going to be impacting the grid or just other financing tools that maybe go beyond the tax incentives that are covered between any of these opportunities.
So the two big kind of loan and financing programs I'd mention is the Transmission Facilitation Program back at the Department of Energy Grid Deployment Office. So TFP is a $2.5 billion revolving fund. It can offer capacity contracts, it can offer loans, and it can offer public-private partnerships. It made its first round of selections providing funding or offering capacity contracts to Southline, to CleanLink, Twin States CleanStake in the Northeast, and Crosstie. And then there's another round of funding that's opening right now. In early February, DOE opened the second round of capacity contract financing for TFP with applications due mid-March. And at the end of February, it opened a round of public-private partnership funding for Alaska, Hawaii, and the territories seeking to connect microgrids to transmission. So lots of activity in the financing space through the work at the Grid Deployment Office. Over in the Loans Programs Office, I want to highlight one of their big IRA programs, the Energy Infrastructure Reinvestment Program, that's financing for projects that retool, repower, or repurpose existing energy infrastructure, including on the generation, but there also is a big focus coming out of LPO for advanced reconductoring and opportunities to get more out of the existing grid, which is something that this EIR program can fund.
So between the alphabet soup, I think we've covered a number of the key opportunities at Grid Deployment Office, USDA. We know that EPA has a big initiative in motion. Is there anything else that you see as a core aspect to advance the grid that you haven't covered much yet?
I think I talked about a lot of the federal programs. I think I should highlight that what is also advancing the need for grid investment and grid upgrades. You know, we've talked a lot about how all these different programs are putting funding onto the grid. They're also, you know, as we are putting money into building electrification, electric vehicles, really pushing to electrify across a number of sectors, industrial decarbonization, all of that, you know, increases the demands on the grid and is drivers for grid investments that we know are needed.
Yeah, the home rebates in full motion now to get advanced solutions directly into consumers, the joint office, doing the hard work on the charging station build outs. It really is a quite comprehensive portfolio.
Yeah, and I'll take a moment to shout out the home energy rebates just because it's a program I've also been working closely with the Department of Energy on, and those offer $8.8 billion across programs that are for whole home energy efficiency, but also to get in electrified appliances into homes, principally targeting low and middle income homes. New York, California, Hawaii, and New Mexico were the first four states that submitted their applications to DOE in late December, early January. And so DOE is working with those states to stand up their programs and is working with all states to begin to get their applications in. So I would encourage you to, if you are, you know, working, if you are in or connected to your state energy office, to stay close as they work with DOE to stand up those programs. And we look forward to consumers being able to take advantage of the rebates later this year.
Good shout out. Maybe we can touch on a couple of the other federal initiatives connected to, but not necessarily directly impacted by those recent packages. So maybe you can highlight the sort of work that you see at the national labs. I think those are often considered the crown jewels of research in general in this country, but not only for energy. So what kind of foundational research and the commercial supporting activities are really being focused on and in motion at the labs?
There's so much great work going at the national labs. I think, you know, Pacific Northwest National Lab, which I had the opportunity to visit last year, is a great example of one of the amazing national labs of the 17 that DOE has. I would say there's a couple of different areas of research and development work I'd want to highlight. So in the transmission planning space, going back to my home office of the Grid Deployment Office, we've talked a lot about the funding that's going out, but part of that is ideally to have it done in a more coordinated and a better planned way. And so Pacific Northwest National Lab, the National Renewable Energy Lab, were two of the big labs that contributed to the National Transmission Needs Study that came out last October, showing short-term needs for transmission, short-term transmission needs across the grid, and really going region by region to show where do we need more transmission? Short answer is everywhere, but where is it most acute, and where is it, you know, what are some of the regions where that connection both within region and between regions would be most helpful? They are also working on the National Transmission Planning Study for a longer-term look at transmission planning. They're doing work on materials that I think is also helpful for some of the supply chain as we think about next-generation grid components as well.
Now a quick word from our sponsor. Virtual Peaker is a cloud-based distributed energy platform that empowers modern utilities to build the grid of the future and meet global decarbonization goals. This SaaS company's platform suites unify all aspects of DER management, from DERMS to customer engagement and demand forecasting. For more information, visit www.virtual-peaker.com and follow the company on LinkedIn and Twitter. And now, back to our chat.
So, obviously, a lot in motion, to say the least. We could talk for hours on all the programs and initiatives. In the last 2 years, I would say, have really shown the federal government flexing what it can impact in the industry. Looking past this November or January 2025, I know can be difficult, but where do a lot of these initiatives and programs go from here? They have many of them 5 or 10 year runways, but looking ahead, you know, how do the longevity of these opportunities look?
So I think we are getting out significant funding this year. You'll see lots of announcements and selections announced throughout the balance of the year running up to November. And so then the work of implementing those projects goes out to states, local governments, the utilities, munis, co-ops, companies, and opportunities to take the funding that they've received from the federal government and turn it into great projects. It is also that they can come back and say, we have used this rounds of funding to show what works and what doesn't, to really hopefully inform grid investments and to provide examples that state regulators can use as they're looking to consider and approve the next generations of grid investments.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the good work will be in implementing the projects well. So I know this will be a little bit of an abrupt adjustment, but yesterday was a big day for FERC. So wanted to initially I had to ask what the plan was for the 3 vacant seats, but I guess I'll ask, you know, in announcing Judy Chang, David Rosner, and Lindsay C., what sort of position do you guys have in trying to fill a full FERC?
So nominations yesterday was the first piece of the puzzle. The administration put forward the 3 nominees, and that if and when they're confirmed, that will give us, you know, back up to a full complement of 5 on FERC, which we haven't had since Chair Glick left at the end of 2022, which will be great for the transmission planning rules that are pending through, you know, with a NOPR status, and also those that could be developed into proposed rules coming out of that really broad advanced NOPR that came out in October 2021.
Great. Well, we have a couple minutes, so I'm going to pepper around a few topics that I know we've highlighted, and I want to start on resiliency. We talk about it in almost every conversation, the frequency and impact of disruption, named storms, it's just hitting every community across the country. You know, how is the administration working both locally and regionally and nationally to support ensuring that appropriate resources are going to address the resiliency of our grid?
So I mentioned a number of funding programs that are going into grid resiliency. Those are complemented by work that the Department of Energy is doing to provide technical assistance and capacity building to states and tribes as they are thinking through how they make investments in grid resilience, right? And so to ensure that the dollars that are coming out of the Infrastructure Bill and Inflation Reduction Act in align with how the state is addressing its resiliency challenges and recognizing that they are different across the country.
Absolutely. I know this topic's near and dear to the administration, so I wanted to touch a little bit about equity, energy justice, and those related areas. Oftentimes, the most vulnerable communities, you know, don't see the best impacts or the most direct impacts of grid investments, and there's the EJ40 initiative for the infrastructure that's going out. I guess I'll ask it this way. How can a more modern grid directly support the communities that need to see these benefits the most?
We're already seeing opportunities to really support the most vulnerable communities that need to see those benefits through some of the first round GRIP announcements, some of the ones where there are work to provide microgrids to help with resiliency and reliability for those that are at the edges of the grid. I think the Department of Energy's work in Puerto Rico is another place where we're really seeing equity included in its grid work to help improve the grid resilience and reliability as they are implementing a $1 billion Puerto Rico Energy Resilience Fund, but also informing how broader billions are going in as Puerto Rico continues to rebuild after hurricanes.
I have to ask, the industry is focused quite a bit these days, as many industries are, on advanced technologies and terminology like AI and machine learning is being thrown out there. How is the administration looking to strike a balance with supporting these advanced technologies that can have benefits, but do come with some risks?
So I think late last year, the president came out with a good executive order on artificial intelligence and really calling on a whole of government response and considerations for it. In the grid space, I know there have been lots of work that the Office of Science and Technology Policy in the White House is thinking about how AI can be helpful, whether that is, you know, in some of the permitting processes. Is it helpful as we think about some of the modeling and forecasting that we need to be better able to have improved resiliency on the grid? So I think it is still open questions and work that national labs, the departments and agencies, the private sector, universities, and a full cohort are working on to identify and lift up the best solutions of where AI can be most helpful.
Yeah. All right. One last topic question, then we'll wrap up. And I think it's a good one. You mentioned it briefly, but electrification just seems to be driving demand for energy supply up and bending those curves. Planning trajectories are really adjusting in a lot of jurisdictions, whether it's transportation, buildings, industrial loads, data centers. How does this change any assumptions or make even more important the initiatives that the agency is working on?
We're in a period of load growth, which we haven't been in across the country for more than a decade. So it is a time where we need significant investment, and not just from a replacement or transition to clean energy, but just broadly bringing on new load into the grid. And you mentioned a number of the factors. I'd also add the data usage from AI as that continues to expand, as really forcing us to have to think about building out the grid and to do it in quick timeframes, right? Electrification and all of these things are coming on much more quickly. And so it is challenging the previous assumptions that load was going to be flat. And so how do we address and adapt to that as utilities are putting forth new IRPs to address that, as we're thinking about how to more quickly connect generation to the grid to be responsive to that increased load?
Great. All right. So our wrap up here, I'm going to frame this way. It seems to us that not only resilient power for communities across the country, but energy transition itself and a number of other key outcomes are at least constrained by grid infrastructure build out that could be transmission or distribution as anything else. So from your perspective, what do you think we're risking if we don't make the necessary investments to advance the grid in a significant way?
I think throughout this conversation, we've talked about how important the grid is underpinning all of the investments and all of the trajectory of the American economy. And so if we are not advancing the grid in a significant way, we won't be able to meet and achieve the electrification goals we mentioned about, the economic expansion, thinking about onshoring and reshoring and expansion of domestic manufacturing. It is that crucial underpinning key that no one thinks about as long as it works. And as we're getting, you know, really late in life for a number of the grid technologies that are already deployed, we really want to pivot and think about advanced grid technologies and thinking about advancing the grid more broadly to meet the moment and the opportunity that we have in front of us.
Whitney, thanks for being on and your perspectives. Thanks for the focus at the administration and your service to the industry and the country. We appreciate you joining us for the kickoff of the season.
Thanks for having me. This is a great conversation.
Thanks again to our season sponsor, Virtual Peaker. If you enjoy Grid Forward Chats, please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, give us a like or a review, and tell your colleagues. You can listen to all episodes and learn more about our efforts to advance the grid at gridforward.org.